Well, as you could see by the wonderful new members that we had standing here a few moments ago, I am blessed as a minister by the demographics of our time. Lots of people are moving to Florida. Lots of people are moving to the Sarasota area, and our county's population increases each year by about 7,000 people, and some of them come to our church. It's wonderful. Now, of course, some of the population increase comes from those of you who are having babies. We've had had a couple infants last week in our nursery, born here. Some of our population comes from young people who are looking for work, and there is work here. We need a lot of folks in our pharmacies to service our older congregation. But many people who come here in that 7,000 are people in their 60s who have come here to retire, no doubt because they read the news that we have the highest overall well-being index score in the United States. Now, how do you determine a generation? Well, intense common cultural experiences form what come to be known as generations. The lost generation is a term that originated with Gertrude Stein to describe those who fought in World War I. The members of the lost generation were typically born between about 1883 and 1900. When I started in the ministry, I had the opportunity to meet and to talk with members of the lost generation. I think of a man who privately talked to me about what it had been like for him to serve as a secretly gay man in the army in World War I. I think of a woman who told me how she had started working at Hull House in Chicago. And those of you who know the history of social work are aware of Hull House in Chicago being one of the great institutions of social work in the United States. She told me stories about working with this great social worker, Jane Addams, who was a Unitarian. And then she told me how she had the honor on her honeymoon of going to Washington and visiting President Wilson in the White House. The next generation, the GI generation, include those who fought in World War II. They were born from around 1900 through 1924. They came of age during the Great Depression. I've had the opportunity of meeting and talking with many in this generation. I think of a woman who told me how she was the founder of the Washington, D.C. chapter of Planned Parenthood back in the 1940s. She told me how she was once invited to have dinner with Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt at the White House. She said, in those days, you just drove your car up to that circular driveway and parked and got out and walked in the door. How things have changed. I think of a woman who, as a child with her parents, got the last flight out of Vienna to London in 1938 as the Nazis took over. I remember a woman who told me how she worked as a member of the staff of the Kodak photography store in Honolulu, Hawaii, in December of 1941, and witnessed the Pearl Harbor attack. The silent generation were born approximately from 1925 to 1942. Now, the silent generation includes some people who fought in World War II, some who fought in the Korean War, and some who fought during the Vietnam War. I think of teachers I had from that generation. I think when I was in Berkeley of the wonderful classes I took from the sociologist Robert Bella about the sociology of religion. I remember in Kentucky when I was a minister there meeting Wendell Berry, who taught me about poetry and the environment. And then when I served a congregation in Bethesda, Maryland, I met Rabbi Ed Freeman, a family therapist who taught me about congregational politics. However, in one way, the silent generation, that generation born between 1925 and 1942, has been skipped over for leadership in our country. How many members of the Silent Generation have been elected president? Just one, Jimmy Carter. Now, we do have a current candidate running from the Silent Generation, born in 1941, Bernie Sanders. The baby boomers were born right at the end of World War II, up until 1964. Some served in the Vietnam War and a few in the first Gulf War. President Clinton, President George W. Bush, and President Obama are all part of this generation. Rush Limbaugh was born on January 12, 1951, in Missouri. And Roger Fritz was born 8 days later in Arizona. We're both part of the baby boom generation. The year I was born, Hillary Clinton was 3 years old, and Donald Trump was 4 years old. So as you see, we're part of a varied, diverse group of approximately 75 million women and men. We defy simplistic generalizations. Yet, as members of the same generation, we share some common, intense experiences. The events of our late adolescence and early adulthood have had a lasting influence on our lives. After a childhood of stability and prosperity featuring the Mickey Mouse Club and the hula hoop, on a Friday in late November of 1963, the baby boom generation tasted death together in an instant. I found out in Phoenix. I was walking home from school to go to lunch. When I got to the house, my mother had the TV on, and Walter Cronkite was on that black and white television saying that the president was dead. I walked back to school. My teachers, most of them were Goldwater supporters. This was Phoenix. They weren't sure how to act. We kids were excited that something so dramatic was happening, but we also felt uneasy. All weekend, the TV showed events unfolding in Washington, and the boomer generation gained a set of shared memories, shared images. They were burned onto our brains. Everyone in my generation grew up a little that weekend. We learned that life was more than Barbie dolls and Davy Crockett hats. After November 22nd, though, we went back to living our lives. Johnson announced the Great Society. The Beatles were on the Ed Sullivan Show. Kellogg's introduced the Pop-Tart. And Ford introduced the Mustang. However, from 1963 on, some of the joy and the fun of life has always been mixed with the reality of tragedy, suffering, and stupidity. We lived through the deaths of Martin Luther King Jr. and Robert Kennedy. We joined in the civil rights movement, the women's movement, the environmental movement. We lived through the Tet Offensive, and we watched the moonwalk. We celebrated the joy of Woodstock, and we protested the killings at Kent State. Some of us read Europe on $5 a day. And we discovered youth hostels. Waterbeds were invented, and Nixon resigned. We danced disco music, and over 900 of us died of suicide in Jonestown, Guyana. Thousands of our generation died of the virus called AIDS, while the rest of us lived to see the fall of the Berlin Wall and the fall of the Twin Towers, and then the election of the first African-American president of our country. Now, as we've matured, we've made contributions to the progress of the human race, and I've just identified a few highlights here. For example, in culture, in 1973, Stephen King published his first novel. In 1977, the boomers created the Apple II personal computer. Then, a year later, Ben and Jerry started selling ice cream. In 1981, we invented what is called the scanning tunneling microscope that allows scientists for the first time to visualize individual atoms. In 1982, one of us created the implantable artificial heart. In 1983, we created synthetic skin products. In 1984, we invented DNA fingerprinting. In 1989, a Unitarian Universalist named Tim Berners-Lee invented something that came to be known as the World Wide Web. That same year, boomers created a TV show called The Simpsons. In 1993, a baby boomer invented the portable dialysis machine. In 1995, we invented the digital camera. A year later, one of us invented the first disposable prepaid cell phone made from recycled paper products. In 1996, one of us invented the automated external defibrillator, something that becomes more important as we grow older. In 1997, we improved the rechargeable lithium battery, which makes a lot of the products we carry around today, like phones, possible. That was in 1997, where we learned to recharge lithium. And then in 1998, we invented another form of recharging, Viagra. These are a few examples of the positive contributions of my generation. They have moved the human race forward in some sort of directions. But now we baby boomers are starting to feel old. Personally, I know I'm getting older because I can no longer remember the name of the host of The Tonight Show. The approximately 75 million baby boomers who did not die in Vietnam or of AIDS are slowly finishing up our work lives. And each year, about 7,000 of us move here, the community with the highest overall well-being score. In Sarasota, baby boomers enjoy theater and sailing, bridge and biking, golf and tennis. Thursday, I went to a wonderful play about the 1960s. It's called All the Way, which explores the first year of President Johnson's presidency. It's a perfect play for baby boomers. Then just last night, I attended a cabaret at the Florida Studio Theater. It's called Yesterday, music from the 1960s with an emphasis on the Beatles. It's another program designed for my generation. And some of the boomers have decided to join a church when they move down here. Of course, some of them choose a conservative church. A few years ago, Dean Kelly wrote a best-selling book called Why Conservative Churches Are Growing. He presented four principles which characterize the largest and fastest-growing religious institutions. First, principle number one, authoritarianism. Usually a charismatic minister directs the church with an iron hand. There is no opposition. Everyone obeys. The hierarchy completely controls the followers. I know one colleague who said on a Sunday morning, everyone who supports my ministry, stand up. And then he said, those of you who remain seated may leave the church. That's authoritarianism. Now, that is not the Unitarian Universalist Church in Sarasota. Second, orthodox dogma. Dogma does not allow for error or ambiguity. A closed system of thought, sufficient unto itself, it represents an uncritical attachment to a single interpretation of reality. That is not the Unitarian Universalist Church of Sarasota. Third, conformity. There is no deviance from the norm, no individual choice. Those who dare to challenge the teachings are confronted with group animosity, with shunning, with suspension, or excommunication. That is not the Unitarian Universalist Church of Sarasota. Fourth, in the list of characteristics of the fastest growing conservative churches is missionary zeal. The church is right, all other churches are wrong, and all people need to be converted. But that is not the Unitarian Universalist Church of Sarasota. We do not follow that formula. Yet, we are also growing. When I asked baby boomers, what are you seeking in a church? You tell me three things. First, you tell me that you are hungry for a place where you can develop friendships with people who believe in the free exchange of ideas in an atmosphere of mutual respect. Friendships, free exchange of ideas, an atmosphere of mutual respect. Boomers who seek us out are looking for an environment without arbitrary restrictions, a sanctuary of safety and discovery, where, with others, they can explore the meaning of their lives. Our two men's groups are popular, and there's talk of starting a third. We have two memoir groups, and one has just published a wonderful book called UU Musings, Episodes in the Lives of Your Friends at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Sarasota. I invite everyone to buy a copy. We have a discussion group called simply Baby Boomers. The Forum each Sunday, and the Free Thinkers once a month, with this wonderful program coming up on Friday. These are important to us. Other adult education events, like the visit of Bishop Spong, provide opportunities to make friends in an atmosphere of exploring ideas. So first you tell me you're hungry for a place where you can develop friendships in a free environment. Second, you tell me you want a church of quality. You have high standards. This means fine music, meaningful worship, good programs for our children, a place where things are done right, not sloppily, not half-heartedly, but with a sense of excellence. So first, a place of freedom with friendship. Second, a church of quality. And third, for many of you, retirement is also a time of social activism. You know that a lasting, satisfying life arises out of giving, not just receiving. In this congregation, many of us are deeply concerned about social issues, so we provide shelter to a homeless family. We support Planned Parenthood. We volunteer to help feed the hungry. We volunteer in schools to help children learn to read. We support overseas projects through the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee and the Unitarian Universalist Partner Church Council. We hold conferences and classes on climate change. We explore ways to reduce our carbon footprint. So some retiring baby boomers are joining our church. Some are hungry for friends who share their liberal religious views. Some feel a need to explore the meaning of their lives up to now within a supportive community. Some hunger for shared ritual and excellence in music. And some are looking for a community of people who share their motivation to engage in social action. Whatever the motivation, they suspect that this church might offer an opportunity to rejoice together, to mourn together, and to delight in each other. Personally, what I admire most about our new members is their continued search for value and meaning in an increasingly complex, uncertain, and fast-changing world. So welcome. Welcome to everyone whatever your age. It is good to have you with us. Your presence enriches the life of our religious community.